I was in grade 5, and I was participating in the school musical. I had a minor role which required me to learn about a dozen lines or so, and I thought that everything was going along just fine. I was attending rehearsals, I was reading my lines, emphasis on reading, everything was going great, as far as Neil was concerned. And we were about 2 weeks out from the performance when the teacher in charge, who happened to also be my teacher, pulled me aside. My friends were about 20 feet away, wondering what Mr. Henderson had to say to Neil. Well, I was told, in no uncertain terms, that I needed to pull up my socks and do better. I hadn't memorized my lines, and there was concern that I wouldn't be ready for the show. I was told to learn my lines by the end of the week, or I would be replaced. All this in full view and earshot of my classmates. I'm sure I was all sorts of shades of embarrassed. But there it was. Now, you might think that doing such a thing to a 10-year-old wasn't the kindest way to go about things, and you might even be right. But I'll tell you that I went home that night and I memorized my lines. And the following day at rehearsal, I did not need a script and only a couple of prompts. I had received a very public dressing down, or as we might frame it, as our gospel lesson does, I had been publicly rebuked. And I also got the message that was being delivered to me. And rather than sulking about it or being mad that I had been treated as I was, I decided to do what I had committed to do. So I learned my lines. I've kept that story largely to myself for over 30 years. My parents don't know that Mr. Henderson spoke to me that day. Or if they do, it's because he called them, but they've never said it to me. My friends that day probably have a sense of what was said. After all, they knew I hadn't memorized my lines up until that time. But I've used that experience, gained when I was 10 years old, as a reminder to try to do the best that I can to the things I've committed to do. And I will go on the record and say that if you were to ask me who the best teacher I had going through my public school education was, I would look back and I would point to Mr. Henderson. Peter receives a very public dressing down in our passage this morning. And for Peter, it's a bit of a rough ride. In the passage preceding our reading this morning, Peter has just proclaimed Jesus as the Messiah, and this has been affirmed. Then, in the next breath, he is rebuking Jesus, only for Jesus to turn around and rebuke him with those powerful and stern words, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." Ouch. All this in sight of the other disciples and those others who have come to learn from Jesus that day. Jesus then goes on to teach about what is necessary if you want to be a follower, to deny yourself, to take up the cross and follow Jesus. To save your life, you must lose it. For those who lose their life for Jesus' sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. Now, in the Greek, there is an interesting play on words that doesn't come out as actively in the English. The words in Greek for behind me are apisu moi. And as you might imagine, they are used twice in this passage. The first instance is when Jesus says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." And the second instance of these words occurring in the Greek is when Jesus says, "If you wish to follow me, pick up your cross." However, in the second instance, from a grammatical perspective in the Greek language, it is not necessary to use the words opisumoi in conjunction with to follow. Because in Greek, to follow automatically carries with it a sense of behind me. And so the only reason that Mark uses opisumoi twice in this passage is to make a point. Mark has Jesus repeating these words to create a parallel to Peter in that previous verse. And perhaps Mark is saying that there are two ways to get behind Jesus. Either as one who seeks to hold onto this life, seeking to find solutions by grabbing more of the same life, or if you are willing to let go, if you can die along with Jesus, then you can get behind Jesus as a disciple. Then you can be behind Jesus as a follower who is back there with a clear view of what Jesus does so that you can imitate him. But one way or another, everyone ends up behind Jesus. A reminder that Christian faith is not a lifestyle choice. It is a vocation. If we lie about Jesus and the truth of the gospel, then we deny a truth about ourselves. But let's get back to Peter and why Peter does what he does, or why he says what he says. Jesus has been talking about how the Son of Man, who Peter now realizes is Jesus, must suffer and be rejected by the temple authorities, that he will be put to death and will rise up to life 3 days later. So imagine that you are Peter, and you have just learned that Jesus is indeed the long-awaited Messiah. Jesus then swears you to silence about this fact, and then goes on to teach about he will die. Except that no one else there knows that Jesus is actually talking about himself. Jesus is the Messiah. He is supposed to restore the throne of King David and drive those wicked Romans from the land. Instead, he says he will be killed by the temple authorities. What would you do? The teaching in this moment isn't for the crowds. It's for Peter. It's for Peter to realize the cause he has aligned himself with, and for Peter to fully understand the depth of God's plan. Commentator Clifton Black writes the following about this passage. Jesus speaks quite openly. There is little in this teaching that requires deep-sea exegesis. It is plain, hard, and inescapable. He also includes the following quote from Mark Twain. "It ain't those parts of the Bible that I can't understand that bother me. It is the parts that I do understand." The message of this passage is not difficult to understand. It might be difficult to live out, but not to understand. The cross is the destination of Jesus. We know this. To save our own life, we must die to the cross, and that can be difficult. But Jesus is clear. We are to lose our own lives for him and for the sake of the gospel. And when Jesus refers to the gospel, he is not referring to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. When Jesus refers to the gospel or to scriptures, he is referring to what we call the Old Testament. And what do we find in the Old Testament? We find commandments to love God, to love neighbor as ourself, to care for the widow, the orphan, and the alien in our midst. To love and do these things is to lose our lives for the sake of the gospel. Now, I don't know about you, but those things sound like they are worth losing my life for. That they are ideals and goals which are worth making a sacrifice for. In a little while, we will go downstairs to Campbell Hall, and after sharing a meal, we will have our annual general meeting. And I hope we will discover that as a community of faith, we have carried the cross and that we have followed Jesus. That we will realize how we have done the work which Christ has called us to do. That in doing so, we will not receive a stern rebuke, but instead find ourselves lined up with Jesus and the goals of the kingdom. Thanks be to God. Amen.